The message. It's Japan.
Ohayo gozaimasu.
Ohayo gozaimasu. We are in the dregs. The dregs of Eurospy season. Hello and welcome to another episode of Kill James Bond. I am November Kelly. I am joined, as always, by my friends Abigail Thorne and Devon.
Hey!
Hello. I am both my own hostage and my kidnapper in life. Decided to do this and I'm now ready to end it.
Yes.
I don't know. I thought this one was okay. Like, it's not that bad. It's the same movie. I can't believe how many of these films in the 60s, they just made the same movie again and again.
Yes.
And it makes me appreciate the degree to which, like, these days we have a plethora, a smorgasbord of content. And, like, you go to the movies, you can be reasonably well assured that if on two different days, you can be reasonably well assured those films will be different films.
Mm.
But this is just, like, The Spy Who Goes to Japan. It's just, like, we've seen that movie, like, five times
Do you
now.
Think that in the 60s, Spy Who Goes to Japan was, like, their MCU? It's just, like, stop showing me movies about this.
No, the MCU, like, has different genres in it, different takes and stuff. Like, these are... It does. Like, I have to think Disney makes very good products. But I'm just like, this is just The Spy Who Went to Japan again.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, all of these characters, they're stock characters, and these stories, they repeat themselves.
It's a monomyth.
Honestly, this is more...
I think we should write another myth. I think we should come up with 1,000 more faces for that hero.
A bi-myth.
More like an oral tradition at this point, watching these Eurospies. Like, you get there's a 009, you have the girl... In the middle, you swap to a different girl, and at the end, you blow up a boat.
Absolutely. The thing is, right, it's like an expansion of same guy theory. This is same film theory. About a year now, we have been watching the same film, and this is the most the same a film has ever been.
We accidentally worst idea of all timed ourselves.
Yeah, we have seen...
We've watched the film again, listeners.
Yeah, we've watched the film. It's time for your weekly The Film. And this time, the film is called A Tout Cœur à Tokyo pour OSS 117, which has like 50 English titles. I went with OSS 117, Terror in Tokyo.
Yes, I think that's what we're going with.
The Wikipedia calls it like Trump Card in the Heart of Tokyo for OSS 117.
That's fucking stupid. Actually, I like that way more.
What?
There's a bunch more English titles for it for no real reason.
It doesn't have anything to do with cards.
Or Tokyo, no. Really, to be honest. Yeah. Like, aside from...
I get the message. It's Japan.
This is not much to make it particularly distinct from Bangkok and the last OSS Sondi set.
Oh my gosh, you're right. This isn't even the first time that this series has done the film.
Yeah, in fact, I'm pretty certain it's the same film with the same guy, because I know they changed OSS 117s a few times, but I think this is... Like, the second time Frederick Stafford has been the spy in the city in Asia in the film, yes.
Yes.
It's not even you only live twice, it's you only live 500 times.
You only live infinite number of times. And I will say this, one reason why this may seem familiar and why this may seem like the film is that it was written by Terrence Young... The guy who directed Dr. No from Russia with Love and Thunderball.
Oh, I see.
Okay. I mean, I did think it was like a competent incarnation of the film.
That's because they poached the director for the first three Bond movies to write this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and those were the good three Bond movies, as far as I can tell.
Oh, the writing, I mean, par excellence, right? Like,
but this doesn't have anything in it as inspired as Klepp.
It's true.
Or as magical as Kronstein, or as you know, suave. It's just like, it's the film again.
I was ready to open my heart, right? If you had given me a French Klepp, La Klepp, it would have been perfect. You know, you give me a French Kronstein, I'm on board with it. But instead, this movie offers me very much the same story beats. Although there is one way in which it differs, right? Is that it doesn't have a 009 scene. It doesn't open with like, this dipshit got killed, now it's time to meet the real spy.
It doesn't even bother because like, we start with OSS 117 on a previous adventure, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's driving through some beautiful, European countryside. Like, half of global warming hasn't happened yet. Mm. He's being pursued by goons in some lovely 60s cars.
They're still in the fuck around century, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he goes to a rock quarry.
Mm-hmm. Likely place to film an action scene, you know?
And Charlie's Angels, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's, like, you know, Star Trek scenes being shot just, you know, out of frame.
Every Doctor Who scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what's noticeable to me is that there's no music. Like, if you want to open your film on, like, a thrilling spy chase, you can't just have, like, beep, beep, like, like, you can almost hear, like, the indicators going. You need a little bit of, like, da 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 da. You need, like, some, like, yeah, here we go. But instead, it's just like.
I will say something funny about the way that my brain works, right? In the background of this, I was looking up who did the music for this. It's a guy called Michel Mann, right? Which is the French name of Michael Mann.
There was a guy who did the music to this? Do you mean the guy who was told to do the music for this and didn't set up to work?
Michel Mann, director of Chaleur. But, like, because my brain is fucked, I read that he studied at the Paris Conservatory, and I read that as controversy, and I'm like, damn, this guy's cancelled. Like, skimming the Wikipedia article, I'm like, yeah, this guy's fucking done. He's cancelled.
They say you gotta teach the controversy. This guy is studying the controversy.
The Paris controversy.
And that's another one of the same movies. It's the Paris controversy.
I did that, like, a discounted Robert Ludlum novel, The Paris controversy.
Wait, hold on. I think I can cancel Michel Mann. And this is, you can tell how little there is to talk about in the actual movie here. Because he married his wife in 1970, having met her while she was hitchhiking as a schoolgirl. And he was born in 1930, so he was 40 when that happened.
Fucking crazy.
Trying to be a paedophile, missing and marrying the girl. Incredible. Also, I'm aware of the Paris controversy, but I do think her memoir was really good, and also she's a good friend of mine, so it's fun.
We've blown past all the recommendations in the accords that they did afterwards as well.
Yeah, it was cool of her to put those accords in there. So yeah, we have a mid-chase scene. There's a Ford Mustang with the, like, yellow French headlights, which looks cool.
Nothing fancy. There's a goon car. They're following.
Why the numbers?
Yeah, he shoots some yellow barrels which are in the quarry for some reason.
Yeah, this is the thing. I note this down. It's in France, right? Instead of our beloved traditional red explosive barrel, they have yellow explosive barrels. And just little, like, cultural differences like this really make me feel like I'm watching a sort of a foreign film. It really, like, gives me that sense of culture, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So he shoots some yellow barrels so they leak petrol, and then he throws a lighter at them and blows up the goon cars. And then he takes off. This is where we should have, like, the da-da-da-da-da-da. But instead, we have the OSS Sondyset theme brackets racist version?
Yes.
Yes. The music in this... See, the guy did show up, right? The, like, nonce... yeah, he's dead now. The nonce who did the music for this did show up to do some music. It's just that all the music was the, like, racist kind. So all of the kind of, like, you are in Asia musical cues of, like, a 20th century European movie are here, right? Including the theme, our beloved OSS theme. Has been, like, turned into that as well.
It never recovered. It never got better after the original OSS Sondyset theme from the first one.
Cohen Matthews, they never should have fired him, you know?
Yeah, well, we had the oh la la. This is just, it's, they've made him straight. They made him straight. And it's not straight. As good. He should have been gay.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, at this point, we get one of the best M briefing scenes we've had in a while.
Yeah, I'll give you the drop again.
I get the message. It's Japan.
Well, no, because M basically says, OSS Sondyset, you're late to the movie. 009 has already been killed off screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Spectre have an undetectable missile. They want $100 million in diamonds, or they're going to blow up one of our military bases in the Far East. And they already did it. Mm-hmm. They did it yesterday. Like, they're not fucking around. This isn't like the ticking clock for the end of the film. OSS, where have you been, dog?
Yeah.
Whilst you've been shooting barrels in the French countryside. These motherfuckers already blew up a military installation.
I really like Spectre's approach here to be like, you know, we want $100 million from you within 24 hours. And to prove that we're serious, you have 0 hours.
Yeah, you have -3 hours. Yeah.
$100 million we blow up a base. And to show you we're serious, the base has been blown up. Not yet identified a second base, but...
Yeah.
We'll get on it. But yeah, so the idea is they're going to strike again. Like, they've proven they're not going to fuck around. They Ozymandias
does. How have they blown up this base, though, specifically? What's their method?
Right, you have a big briefing. This is one of the two funny things that happen in the movie. They have a big briefing where they're like their classic slide projector and everything. They're all sat around serious as hell trying to figure out what's going on. And the idea that gets put forward is, what if they made a small plane so that it could be on the radar and you'd think it was far away because it was so small, but actually it was close to you?
It is legitimately the Father Ted small, far away thing. Yes. They have miniaturized a fighter plane.
They were like, what the fuck? No one could have shot down this thing because that plane was too far away on the radar. No, just small, mate. Just small.
Is that how radar works?
No.
But crucially, you wouldn't think of that. You wouldn't think, oh, someone has made an exacting small replica sort of model aeroplane.
Tiny F-35.
Welcome to tiny fighter world, Winston. And yeah, as M says,
all of human warfare into pre and post tiny fighter plane. It really changed.
I mean, that's basically what a drone is. So they kind of were ahead of their time.
Yeah, yeah. It is, as we see later on. It's like unpiloted. It is like remote control. Huh. But they say, well, there's an F-35, but it's miles away. It couldn't have been that. I know SS Sandy said it's like, oh,
it's just small.
What if it was just a petit? And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Go to Japan, you dipshit.
Yeah, literally, it is like next location. He's like, don't fucking tell me Japan. I see on the title of the movie. I will also say that Spectre here is called, once again, the organization. And M's line is, you know, we've been contacted by a mysterious organization known as the organization. I think I would love or possibly hate to be contacted by a mysterious organization.
Oh, man.
Depending on what the deal was with it, right?
Like, I hate to get an email that changes the whole rest of your day. And I think getting contacted by the organization would really fucking...
I mean, this is basically my relationship with His Majesty's Revenue and Customs. They are the organization that just tells me, yeah, shit's fucked now.
I don't know. I love it when the organization calls me. It means I'm going to get to kill people for money. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Mm. Calling your polycule the organization so you can say, I've been contacted by a mysterious organization. And it's just like three of your wives telling you that, you know, they want you to pick up dinner on the way home.
That's so good.
We have people everywhere.
For God's sake, you don't expect them to actually mean it. Polyamorous people use that expression. You expect them to have someone in the room.
Wilson was in that polycule.
That's so, I love that.
I'm always sending my girlfriends out to check the perimeter.
Yes.
First thing to know about polyamorous people is we have people everywhere.
These stories, they come from ancient times and they appear like once a generation. They get retold. Yeah. As always, here's our guy in location.
Yeah.
In this situation, it's a little lad called Saki.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. They have like a white CIA guy, and then they have Saki, the local employee. And also, for some reason, neither of them are OSS 117's contact, who is a guy called Ralston.
Yeah.
Never shows up in the movie and is killed off screen in a phone call.
Once again, they're just like, OSS 47, you're late to the movie. You're Felix, the guy you were supposed to meet, Felix Leiter, he's fucking dead. We don't know where the fuck he is, right? He's gone missing, and he told us, like, CIA dude and Saki, your local guy, don't get attached.
Babcock and Saki, yeah.
To watch over this girl, Ava Wilson. She's our 10 out of 10 smoke show for this. She has amazing eyebrows, and she also has the unfortunate distinction of being a kind of like slightly more cunty doppelganger of my abusive ex, who looked very much like this and was also part French. So I was just like, wasn't surprised when she turned out to be evil.
Yeah. This, by the way, is Marina Vladi. She starred in two or three things I know about her. And this is the thing about all French movies is you watch them and you're like, that actor was in a way better movie. This is not a good movie, but she's in this, right? And the deal is she's a cipher clerk. You remember embassies used to have these. There was one in From Russia with Love. She has been like sexually blackmailed. And it's unusual that they make this quite explicit, right? That like a guy, a Japanese guy, has like compromising explicit photos of her.
Her and Ralston, I think, is the idea that like they went on a date. She woke up, she blacked out on the date, woke up in a strange place, like went home. A week later, a Japanese guy came to her and was like, yo, I have like pictures of you and Ralston having sex. Give me the radio codes so I can find out where the base is, or we'll post them on the internet when that's invented in 50 years.
A little note here is that there's one of the guys in the interrogation room, and this is a rare usage of the word incredible to mean like not credible. But what instead happens is that she goes, a month ago, I met a very polite hot guy. You know, we went out to the Cabaret Mikado. Next thing I remember, I was waking up alone in a bedroom in a Tokyo suburb, and this guy in the background in a full business suit goes, "That sounds incredible."
You ever see someone get gender dysphoria in real time?
Yeah.
All right, bro, you're working through something. That's nice. Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't. It was actually kind of bad, but yeah. Also, something that struck me about this is like in the pre-internet days, someone leaking your nudes was like still very bad, but probably like a much smaller threat, I want to say.
You would hope so, yeah.
Because what's it, like, he's going to like nail them to a church door? Like, what's he going to do? Like,
the thing that she's worried about is that she's going to tell, that he's going to tell her husband specifically.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Okay.
And so OSS devises, of course, obviously, the spy cop's plan again, where he's like, "I'm going to pretend to be your husband," and it's weirdly, it's like a sort of like cards up spy cops, where he's like, he tells her, "I'm going to show up, pretend to be your husband. You have to act like you're in love with me, and we're going to like entrap the blackmailers."
So rather than like send her home to the US to stand trial, basically, for being an accessory to blowing up the space. They say, "Well, we're going to let you go, and you're going to be the bait, and my cover is I'll pose as your husband." So that's what they do. And then he assaults her.
Yes.
He
does. Consent is key.
On-screen sexual assault within the first half an hour of the film.
Yeah, and the way that this is played throughout the whole movie, and for what it's worth, it's repulsively written, but kind of well-acted. The idea is this kind of like, you have this frisson, you have this like banter between them, right? So like, he gets off the plane as her husband and like sticks his tongue down her throat, right? And she essentially goes, "Oh, what do you think you're doing?" And he says, "Well, you know, they reward me for being audacious or whatever. It's why they made me a colonel." And she goes, "They should have made you a general," which is a funny line. It's just within the context of, oh, you're writing banter about like sexually assaulting a woman. It's bad.
Yeah, she says they go to a restaurant and they're like, you know, waving to people and like, "Hello."
Neither of them know how to use chopsticks.
No.
The whole scene is filmed around neither of the... Both of them are holding chopsticks, wrongly, but neither of them are ever going to go for any food with them because, like, they don't know how. So they're just in kind of chopstick stasis.
But the actors don't know how, but the character... Well, like, she's meant to be able... Like, she's been living in Japan for years and speaks Japanese.
Supposed to speak Japanese. Yeah.
I think she's meant to at one point, but she's like, "Oh, how far will you take this role?" And he's like, "Oh, when my country's interests are at stake, I stop at nothing." And it's like, small man misogyny.
It's gross. My next note is just stares at tits, which I think he does, but I don't remember.
No, he puts a little recording.
Oh, yeah.
Because they get a note from the blackmailer being like, "Come and meet me at the blackmail location." And she's like, "Oh, shit."
Like a fortune cookie or something, vaguely.
Yeah.
They get like 3 fortune cookies, and the first 2 fortune cookies are like ancient wisdom bullshit, right? Like, all warfare is based. And then the third one is like, "Meet me at the blackmail location. Re-blackmail. Per my previous fortune cookie."
Or if not expecting blackmail.
Yeah.
This is a total fucking aside. I'll just tell this for fun.
Not this podcast.
Which is that, like, twice in my life, I have received fortune cookies that were, like, weirdly apropos to the situation I was in.
Mm.
So one time, I was, like, kind of slowly becoming involved in a thing with someone. And, like, we hadn't gotten together yet. And, like, we were both in relationships with other people. And we went out for some Chinese food. And we both got the same fortune, which was, "Be careful, you are easily tempted." And we were just like, "Well, we have to have sex now. The fortune cookie told us to." And did.
"Your Honor, I had sex because a cookie told me to. A baked good."
That cookie was the most like Hail Mary anti-having sex with that person event that you guys could have given you.
Well, we then had a nice relationship for a while. But then anyway, and then most recently, I was in a breakup with someone and we went for Chinese food and my fortune cookie said, "Do not give in to cynicism." And I was just like, "Oh, thank you once again, fortune cookies."
You have a special relationship with a fortune cookie, you know?
Yeah.
My question is, why are fortune cookies a Chinese-American food item on the menu? Question mark. in Japan at a Japanese...
I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, yeah. No, so you're
right. They're not even cookies. They're like fortunes wrapped around a piece of stone that gets given to them. And I don't know... Well, very bad cookie. Very bad for your teeth.
Oh, you get your like fortune stone like thrown at you.
Don't eat that unless your fortune...
Just like check out this proverb, idiot. But so he's like, fine, we're gonna entrap them. And the way we're going to do that is... Because Japan is just becoming famous at this point for like microelectronics. Here is this Japanese made brooch that contains a secret microphone. And I will say that it's slightly more realistic than a lot of like bugs in movies in that it has to have a power source. This is a recurring bit though. We are told that these microphones have to have like a battery like wired to them. And so like he later on another woman, he'll be like, well, where do you keep the battery? Right. And so he kind of like sexually assaults her some more in the course of like putting this brooch on her and then like install, like wiring the battery to her. And he like unzips her dress and like ogles her from the back. And it's meant to be suave and she's meant to be like, is she maybe a bit into this despite herself? And like I say, this is well acted, so it conveys that. It's just that what it's intending to convey is so fucking gross now that you're like...
It's just the raw facts of a situation are not...
Yeah, I don't know that I would act like this. I don't know that many women would act like this, you know? Just a thought, maybe. But you show this to an audience of like 1960s French guys and, you know, they love it and they develop some strange ideas about women.
Also, something I noticed is that she's outdoors wearing this brooch microphone, mm-hmm. and there's no like dead cat or anything on the brooch. So presumably, all the sound she's going to capture. Apologies, so
this is just like listening to that feed, being like, huh.
So, apologies, Nate.
I really can't hear shit. It turns out.
Yeah.
And we get a couple of shots of 1966 Tokyo, but it's like so perfunctory that I don't even bother writing down. You will never be in 1966 Tokyo because it doesn't look like anything.
I did write that. It looks pretty. I liked it.
It was nice.
They don't give it the attention it deserves. So it's just like, and here's Tokyo. Like, You Only Live Twice gave more consideration to like Japan as a place that might be cool to look at than this movie does.
He does the same thing Sean Connery does in that, which is he walks around looking at Japanese stuff and just like shaking his head. So yes. A guy goes past wearing, I don't know if they're pronounced Gita or Gaita, but
Gaita,
like,
yeah.
Gaita, the clogs with the little like stilts on them. And he just like shakes his head and I'm like, that's normal.
Only in Japan.
Oh, you crazy Japan. What'll you think of next?
I get the message. It's Japan.
Yes. Seeing a totally normal pair of shoes. It's like, I understand, it's Japanese. There's a couple of these. He like, because the meet is happening at the like at a temple, and so anytime he goes past like the like torii, anytime he goes past the like statuettes and stuff, he looks at those and he goes like, ah, Japan, what do you think of next? It's wild that you have all this. Meanwhile,
the walls are made of paper over here. This is crazy.
It's wild. Meanwhile, she's kind of like bantering with him some more over the microphone. She's making fun of him for being a pussy, which is always a reliable way to get me to like you as a character in a Bond movie. Because she's like, yeah, I'm taking all the risk. And the gallant colonel is just like sitting in his car watching. That prompts him to like get out and be like, check out all this Japanese shit they got in Japan.
Fine. Fuck, I'll come. I'm walking around then, dickhead.
I'm not intimidated by sandals.
I will allow myself to be goaded into taking unnecessary risks. I am a very good spy.
They made me colonel.
It's just weird to be like, he mentions this at every opportunity. It's his rank, you know? Like, Bond never hits you with the commander, you know?
He doesn't.
I'll say that in his favor. But so, she goes to the blackmail meeting.
Yeah.
There is a guy in a sinister trench coat. And I love a sinister trench coat. You don't get this these days. You can't even buy them. At some point, they decided to stop selling the kind of trench coat that makes you look like mad sinister.
What else has he got, though? What else does this
probably
guy have?
Shortly after Columbine, I'm imagining.
Different kind of trench coat. This is like the kind of khaki-colored, like, Macintosh.
They do sell these to women, to like, specifically, like, very tall, skinny women.
Well, that's my problem, like, on a couple of counts, yeah.
I've seen them in those.
I guess there's never been, as far as I know, a like mass shooting perpetrated by a guy wearing one of these Macintoshes. Like, because the only like firearm available to you when you're wearing one of those is like a kind of snub-nosed revolver. So you get to like shoot six people, right?
We're coming together with a sort of metric of whether or not specific jacket types have been used in mass shootings here.
Yeah.
Most of my jackets are still in the clear, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing this guy has is a facial deformity, which we haven't seen in a hot minute, but as a classic for a spy series, he's got a little facial scar.
Yeah.
Very strange that like we haven't seen this in a while, because you would have assumed that 1960s movies would be worse about things like this, but it's actually worse now.
That's true. Mm. That's earnestly true, especially since the scar itself is like quite subtle.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on it until he describes this guy to someone else later as like, oh, he has a scar under his eye. I missed it completely.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very well done, so it could just be like sauce or something. Yeah,
I was thinking about the coat.
Because nowadays, most like, well, 5 for 5 Craig Bond villains had a facial deformity.
God, that's true. Every single one.
Mm. I guess they thought the scariest thing is that, like, what if there was a businessman?
Well, I mean, also, you have to bear in mind that it was also way more racist. So they thought the scariness quotient was increased a bunch by like being Japanese.
That's very true.
Japanese
yeah.
guy with like a really minor scar is like, that's the most terrifying thing your average 1966 French person has ever seen.
I haven't calibrated my Hitler particle detector for like the 1960s audience.
This is, I mean, it's specifically French, so it's like a Pétain particle like detector, but yeah.
Well, I guess to an American audience, like at this time period, some of them might have like within their lifetimes been fighting Japanese soldiers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know. I've never really considered that.
21 years earlier? Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, so her mic cuts out and then she gets into a car and drives away. And Sondyset follows this guy into the world's most obvious trap, which he immediately falls for.
Romantic meeting.
Yeah, right?
Genuinely, I wrote this out. So he follows him through a kind of weird sex club, right? And this being a traditional thing that we get to like poke fun at Japan for, right? Because nowhere else has weird sex stuff. And the weird sex stuff is he walks in, he like, you know, pays the thing at the door and they hand him a camera. And the idea is there's a bunch of men with cameras taking photos of like strippers, right? This is not a sustainable business model. You have to buy all the cameras first and pay the strippers. I mean, these days, if you want to like get together with a bunch of your friends and like take like film photos of beautiful women, you just have to transition to do that. So
I assume they don't allow you to take pictures in a strip club. I've never been in one, but I assume that's the case.
It's like a themed activity, I think, is like the idea. So it's like if your fantasy is to like take photos of women, then you can just do that for a fee in like a controlled environment, you know?
I mean, listen, this whole sequence, like you're showing me 1960s Japan by night shot on a film camera. I'm only fucking human, okay? I see the thing the neuron activates. What am I going to do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Trying to take you two to the strip club where they give you the cameras and you guys are complaining about the camera.
I was trying to look at what model of camera it was and I couldn't even make it out. And that really upset me.
And specifically because of that, I noticed that it changes to a different camera on one shot. And I was like, it's such a cinema sins ding ass thing to notice. And I swear to God, it's not the kind of film criticism I want to do. But I was staring directly at the camera.
There's so little else. The like fucking substrate for that for the film criticism here. The actual like the movie, there's so little in it that we're reduced to this.
They do have this like kind of like gay tension because he follows him. He follows him into like a, well, I guess a hotel or something, and then like the Mr. Facial Deformity is standing at the other end of a corridor.
He's like framed really beautifully here as well. He like looks over his shoulder in the like, he's a good looking guy. He's wearing the like fucking menswear jacket. And the thing about a trench coat, this kind of like trench coat, is, you know, it's got like a kind of waist to it as well, which a lot of men's clothing at the period didn't. He's like over his shoulder, he's smoking. And I'm like, damn, we're going to like fuck this guy or what, boss?
Okay.
And obviously OSS Sondyset is thinking the same thing, right? And so he advances.
Starts walking towards him like, okay.
Upon the like fuckable Japanese man, at which point he is made victim to the textbook Uncle Charlie. And I mean, this is straight out of the instructional DVD.
Incredible stuff.
You like, they trained for 8 months to sell this Uncle Chop. It's beautiful. A guy just like waits in one of the side rooms, and as soon as OSS Sondyset goes past him, comes out and like pops him right between the shoulder blades. It's beautiful.
Oh, he goes down. It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah.
He makes an incredible face too. Like he's Howard Moon in The Mighty Boosh, just going, oh! The Uncle Chop face is like an art unto itself. But then at this point, the goons who are carrying him away unconscious, having been thusly chopped, they get chased away by some other guys who then just like just abandon him, and then he wakes up backstage at the strip club.
Yeah.
Yeah. They check his ID and they see that he's like Mr. Wilson, and they go, oh, well, we can't fuck with this guy. You know, we're blackmailing his wife. Let's just leave him.
Yeah. And so they just leave him where he wakes up surrounded by concerned strippers, which must be nice. And then he does the fucking broken English thing like a cunt. And I mean, they charge him for the camera, and you really hope that they inflated that by like a factor of 100 just because of that, you know?
Because he said, wakes up and just me bump head on ceiling, me very silly.
But he actually wasn't being racist. He just suffered a serious like neurological injury.
Might not say lyricisme. Great. He goes back to Ava's house. Little detail I have here. Immediately helps himself to her booze. Very rude.
Yeah. He's a rude man is the thing. He's very presumptuous.
He's very rude, especially given that he now rapes her.
Which in many ways the ultimate act of rudeness.
Which is a very rude thing to do.
In fact,
in many sort of etiquette guides.
In Japanese culture, they frown on this quite
frankly. Yeah, this is considered impolite.
Yeah. He hasn't done his homework, obviously. What he says to this woman is, he goes, well, I'm pretending to be your husband, so we're going to have sex now, obviously. And she goes, I'd prefer that you didn't. And he goes, that's fine. I'll go get a hotel somewhere else. Call me if the bad guys show up to kill you.
The way he delivers that line, a little bit cunty as well. He's like, yeah, just call me if anyone starts shooting. Again, the dub on this, it like sells the whole thing a bit more. Unfortunately, what it's selling is ranted.
Yes. And then she gives in. So that is just, there's no two ways about that. That's just rape.
Do not get Terrence Young to write your movie. He will write this kind of thing into it.
God, what the fuck happens next?
Oh, my next note is a sexy lady sniper van, which is a very compelling four words in any language, I think.
Hello, Croydon. We are sexy lady sniper van. Yeah, so a van pulls up that's got a sexy lady on the side of it.
Big sexy lady, like a cardboard sexy lady. It's not like printed on the thing. It's like the wall of the van is like one oversized sexy lady. It's like very visually impactful.
And then the face of the sexy lady is concealing a guy with a dart gun.
This is the Terrence Young did this in From Russia with Love in reverse. It's the same scene backwards where they're like, sniper rifle comes out of the sexy lady instead of like shooting a guy coming out of the sexy lady.
It's so like, it's just fucking ChatGPT, this fucking thing, just plagiarized, like GPT-1 in 1967.
GPT-1 used to run on a bunch of like reel to reel things, and it would spit out like, yeah, then he rapes her. And we're like, thanks, great.
Thanks, man. So he shoots what we think is Saunders Sett in the bed, and then I love the way the guy, when he gets out of the sexy lady sniper van, is just like, he's very calm, he's walking very slowly, he's just like, yeah, bothed it, nailed it, absolutely kicked his guy's ass.
Yeah This is your classic like sinister henchman, very very sweaty looking, like always like thick sheen of sweat. This is Mr. Chang, brackets, not played by a Japanese actor.
Yeah, white question mark?
They have Japanese actors in this movie. They couldn't find another one, I guess. And then he like sneaks in and he does the funniest fucking thing that it's possible to do with a house in which most of the walls and doors are made of paper screens, which is locks her in the bathroom.
Yeah. That'll fucking do it.
Gotta be honest, that would not stop me. I would simply walk through the wall.
Yeah, you have a good excuse to do that, and it's gonna, like, feel good as hell, right? Like,
you're gonna wanna walk through that wall.
Yeah, if I got the opportunity to, like, walk through a shoji screen, I would be, like, so fucking enamored with that.
The first opportunity. Even a hint that I might need to walk through a shoji.
Can we do like a live show in Japan, just come out and just walk through like 50 shoji screens?
It's like we come through one panel each.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
How many shoji screens stacked up do you think you could run through?
Oh, max velocity. I'm going at like, maybe optimistic here, like 10. I think I could go through 10, like back to back.
This is my new game show. I'm pitching this to Channel 5. It's gonna be like Hole in the Wall. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
it's
just like,
how many shoji screens do you think you could run through in one go? I'm workshopping the title.
Yeah, okay. No, this is pretty good. Like, we can work on this. If you get through that round, we can move on to like foam core. We can get to like plywood.
Yeah, we make them thicker, like it's cardboard now.
Chipboard.
Yeah.
No one's ever beaten the final round, which is just bricks.
Yeah, this vault door. How many vault doors can you like run through?
And it's coming at you fast as well, so really, you know.
Oh yeah. But yeah, so he like locks her in the bathroom.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then he goes to like inspect his work. Not really any reason for him to do this. He's already killed the guy. But he pulls the cover off the bed and reveals that he has fallen for the oldest trick in the book. The classic canonical, put a weird mannequin in your bed in case someone shoots it.
The 117 branded blow up doll. That's it.
Now, here's my question. Was this somebody said went to the strip club?
Yes,
he did. And then he was knocked out, and then he came back to Ava's house, and then they shagged.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have this with him.
Well, it's an inflatable like mannequin version of himself. So presumably uninflated, it could have just been in his pocket. And then, having had sex with her, he then goes, "Do you mind if I inflate this copy of myself?"
But it's not of him. It's just like a plain crash test dummy face with a toupee on it. So I'm just like, Ava, why do you have...
She has the, like, Man from U.N.C.L.E. thing. This is, like, her inflatable clown. Yeah.
Why do you have an inflatable man?
Many, many life 1960s size. Women, it seems, at least two from having done this podcast, were very into having a kind of, like, inflatable humanoid figure in their bedrooms for reasons unknown.
I also like to have like a stuffy or something when I sleep, like, but I feel like inflatable.
I hate when you like go and have sex with a girl and you've got to like learn all of her inflatable mannequins' names, you know?
But I just feel like an inflatable stuffy, you're tempting fate because if it pops in the night, you're going to fucking shit yourself.
Turning my inflatable mannequin to face the wall before I have sex.
Waking up in the middle of the night and it's like fully inflated, leant up against the corner of your room.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, oh, fuck. Okay.
I mean, to be fair, right, having one of these, it allows you the opportunities for some very funny pranks like that, including the one that OSS 117 has just played on Mr. Chang, because Chang pulls back the cover and fairly shits himself to see that the, you know, the mannequin is now, like, it's been pierced the little, like, dart from his dart gun is deflating. And OSS 117 is behind him and holding him at gunpoint.
Ah.
And Mr. Chang, oh, this accent.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very racist.
Mr. Chang, played by a guy called Jacques Legras, says...
Doesn't sound promising.
Yeah, sort of at gunpoint. Oh, yeah, my bad. Sorry about that.
Dang.
Dang, that's crazy. Wasn't expecting you to hit me with the classic inflatable body double. That's my mistake, you know?
I'll be real with you, Chief. I wasn't prepped for this. I don't know what we do from here.
He does a very racist accent. He calls him the honorable foreigner. It's like it's like everything but the fake teeth, man. Yeah. It's so bad.
Mm-hmm. He's wearing like yellow face makeup, I'm pretty certain.
Also, as that, so OSS 1D says, like, right, take me to where you were going to take me when I was unconscious. Takes him at gunpoint. On the way, they have this back and forth where they quote Confucius, and I'm like,
Yeah, all warfare is based.
Oh, that's not Japanese, dude.
We do get like one of like three interesting shots in the movie where we get like a long shot of a first generation Shinkansen, the bullet trains, the ones that still looked really like bullets, like speeding across like a sort of an elevated railway over a rice field.
Yeah, this was a beautiful shot. I was just like, oh, pretty.
Yeah, it's good. The best part of the movie is the B-roll, you know?
It's like bisected by the like sexy lady sniper van going in the opposite direction.
I mean, whoever was on like second unit on this film. Yeah, great
for
job.
Real, for real.
Great job. You nailed it.
My next note says RIP Mr. Chang.
I guess he died.
Because they're being followed.
Yeah.
And like, so the guys come on the radio and they're like, oh, is this one set? We're following you. Don't try anything. And he tries something.
And to prove we're serious, we have planted a bomb in the sexy lady sniper van, which, when did they do this? And how little confidence do they have in the work of Mr. Chang that they, like, plant a bomb in his work car just in case he gets owned badly enough that he ends up in it with OSS Sondi Set?
Also, it's on the back seat.
Yeah.
Chang, you didn't notice that?
I mean, maybe that's why he's on the kind of, like, we put a bomb in your car performance improvement plan is because he doesn't look for these things.
It's got lights on it, my dude. Like, you do.
I mean, to be fair, like he does, as soon as they come on the radio, he does say, hey, you guys aren't mad at me, right?
Hey, everyone. Just checking if this is an organization that tolerates failure.
Yeah, Mr. Chang at this point is doing what I do whenever my agent calls me, but except he's also doing a racist accent. And just being like, why are you calling me? Are you mad?
Your agent calls you and you do a perfect racist accent to get insecure about your career.
Every time anytime anyone in acting world calls me, I got to call anyone from the exec producers of the show I'm going to be in the summer. And I was just like, oh, I didn't expect you to call me. Is everything all right? She's like, yeah, just checking in. How are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, show comes out soon. And I was just like, oh, sorry. Sorry about that racist accent.
Mr. Chang has basically the same conversation where he's like, you guys, have I been like fucking up somehow? Have I wronged you in some way? And that honestly, they kind of like, you know, gas him up a bit. They're like, no, you're fine. We love you. It's just you are in a car with the guy that we want to kill. So like, probably don't like.
I mean, I don't rate your chances. If it helps, we're sorry.
Yeah, you seemed nice. Like,
you're a great lad, Mr. Chang. It's just you're not going to be in this movie for much longer.
Mr. Chang is like solid lad. Gets the round in every time. It's like fine to work
with.
He's
in yellow face and he's doing the accent.
But
we really frown on doing that in this country.
And specifically, yeah, in Japan as well. Yeah, to be doing the like racist pseudo-Japanese.
They're waiting for the first opportunity to be like, oh, you failed this organization. Great. All right.
Yeah, you're sort of evil genius who is really like obviously waiting for you to fail in order to be like,
you're 5 minutes late. This organization does not tolerate failure. Bang.
Did you remember to put your can away? Is that your can right there? And he's like, oh, no, that's not mine. He's like, right, fine, whatever.
Yeah, touch your hand to the metal plate.
You just touched the metal plate for me real fast, man.
So they, OSS Sondi Set points the van he's in at the goon car and then jumps out and manages to blow up all of them. RIP Mr. Chang, we will not miss him.
Damn shame.
Hoist by their own petard, those other two guys, you know, which goes to show, you know.
And at this point, Sondi Set remembers to do some actual fucking detective work. Because he's like, wait a minute, why don't we just go to the bar where you dated Walston and got knocked out? Maybe we'll learn something by going there.
Yes.
Which we probably should have done on day one, actually.
The Mikado Cabaret.
Because we need to meet the second woman in the film.
Yes. This is Tetsuko. She is like a hostess at this cabaret. And the way that the cabaret works, right, is that you buy tickets at a desk. And then you like Chuck E. Cheese, except with like more sex work, right? Because then you cash in those tickets for like, you get to buy this hostess a drink or like have a dance with her or whatever. He buys some tickets and then comes up with her and introduces Tetsuko to Eva, the like other girl, as Miss Four Tickets, like with her like commodity value. Which is the worst fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. They should kill this guy for real. Like, earnestly, he should be killed.
Yeah, it's a pity. But yeah, and at this point, like, Sondi Set claims that Ava is his sister. It's like, oh, she's my sister. She's just leaving. And then she retorts by being like, my brother has epilepsy and sucks. I'm like, what?
It's really funny for your pull to embarrass a guy being like, yeah, he's got epilepsy. You need to slap the shit out of him. A thing you definitely need to do with people with epilepsy. Also, this is not the only time I write down strange polyamory vibes.
Mm. Yeah, it does kind of have that energy of like, my girlfriend and I saw you from across the bar and we think you're cool.
Yeah, this is like the bad polyamory bit though, because like at this point textually, because in these 60s movies like corrective rape works, right, this woman is like kind of in love with him now, and so as a consequence, when she's being kicked out because he wants to hang out with this other woman, she's jealous, and that's why she's like setting him up to fail, is that she both kind of has some contempt for him in a like a sort of playful, banterous way, but also is jealous as fuck.
Well, she's monogamous, you see, and that's always difficult.
One person's monogamous,
the other person's polyamorous.
She has like some bad jealousy stuff. Mm.
It's the I consent, I don't thing.
Yeah. He like seduces Tetsuko. He's like, hey, what time do you get off work and can it be now? And she's like, yeah, fine.
Sure.
He gives all of his excess tickets to another, to like the only other white guy in there on the way out, and is like, these are from the UN, which I don't know that the UN does that.
Yeah, if they do, they shouldn't.
You look like the biggest danger in here. I want to give you a leg up.
You want to talk about UN agencies that need to be defunded? The one that just like buys sex workers for, well, actually, I mean, a few UN agencies have done that in their time, but nonetheless.
So he says to Tetsuko, he says, I have two questions. Firstly, have you seen, and feel free to answer these in any order. Firstly, have you seen the blackmailer from the scene from earlier? Do you remember that scene? Secondly, shall we have sex now? Hmm. Answer these in any order you like. And she's like, I'm going to take your second question first. Let's go to an inn and do a little bit more racism and then have sex.
Yes. She claims not to know the guy with the like cool coat and also facial scar. But she's like willing to take him to a rural inn, like a sort of the trad motel.
They like bathe him, they dress him. We get some more like, oh, Japan, what are you like? Like pretty girls.
Before they get there, though, he does find a microphone on her, which is where we get the like, yeah, where are you keeping the battery pack for that? Yeah, this is kind of like interestingly done, and it's trying to do the same thing as before. They're like, oh, they're both maybe playing each other. Nobody's being honest with each other. It's kind of fun. But she like convinces him that this like microphone is just something that like her boss uses for workplace surveillance.
Yeah.
And he buys this, and like, no question. He's like, okay, fine.
She's gathering cookies on the clients to, you know.
Yeah.
Every other spy in one of these movies is so much more competent than Hubert or Delabasse.
That's very true. Like, yeah. It never crosses his mind that she might be a spy.
He's less competent than the parody version of himself. Like,
yeah.
It's honestly true. He goes to the inn with her, and they're like, okay, you got to put on a kimono now and be, like, washed and stuff. And the whole time he's doing the same thing as with the gaiter, where he's like, well, isn't this a novelty? This appears to be some kind of like dressing gown situation. Okay, I just guess I'll go along with this.
At this point, and I made careful note of this, listeners, because we'll come back to it later. The guy who owns the inn is like, oh, glad you're having a good time. By the way, I have a gun.
Yeah, he comes up from a bow with a gun, which is a great piece of hospitality.
Call an ambulance, but not for me. And, like, forces him into the next room where we get Japanese Jaws.
I wrote down that this room was the Mongo Dojo Onsen, which I don't think is a legal combination of words.
No, definitely
Wasn't that the villain from Powerpuff Girls?
do you have to cut this beyond something really funny? I also wrote down that exact joke. I was building to the fucking Mongo Dojo from Powerpuff. No, it's fine. You did it better than me.
I'm so sorry. I beat you to the punch. I'm so sorry.
I don't even know why we would need to cut that. We can leave
all this.
Yeah,
in.
Yeah, we can leave this in.
Don't let him know that you had that joke as well.
Yeah.
I completely like sniped your fucking punchline. I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah, holy shit, Mongo.
Mm-hmm. It's a big dude. It's a big guy.
Look, you get all the classics in here. Someone studied their big guy fights. There's a bunch of pillars around and he punches through one. Classic. He takes three headbutts before he starts showing any effects. Classic. He is making gorilla noises the whole time. Not good. Really don't like that.
No.
Yeah. OSS Sondi sets him on fire and runs away.
As he's chasing this guy down, the guy realizes something that I've previously expressed an opinion on, which is that running through a shoji screen, fun as hell.
Yeah. See, once again, they lock him in the room and they're like, done, nice. And then he just comes to the screen and they're like, oh, fuck. Oh, yeah.
It's objectively fun to like punch through a wall or door. And when you make that wall or door out of paper, you're really inviting that from me. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. And he goes through like 50 of these fucking things in pursuit, in like hot pursuit of this guy.
And eventually he gets on a motorbike and drives away. At which point Tetsuko like rolls up in his car and is just like, the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, get in. Despite having been owned and tricked and kind of kidnapped, as far as he knows, by her, he just gets in the car? Is he stupid? What?
He is stupid.
There's a guy in the back with a gun who is the same guy who picked him up and saved him earlier on when he was knocked out by the uncle chop, right?
And this is Tesco Value Tiger Tanaka from You Only Live Twice.
Yeah, he says, I'm Kawachi, I'm Japanese Secret Service, you're OSS on set. The big guy was an ally. He was just supposed to lead you to me. Why did you attack him? And I'm like, hang on one motherfucking minute. If this guy was on our side, why did the innkeeper pull a fucking gun on me.
Well, hello, welcome to the meeting. Here is your complimentary meeting gun. I'm offering it to you barrel first, as is, like, tradition.
Bullshit, bullshit!
By the way, he does also claim that the big guy, the Mongo, was a sumo wrestler, which
he was not built
like that.
No, kind of, yeah, no.
Yeah, not a sumo wrestler. But no kill on that guy, which did give me a lot of hope that he would come back. Sadly,
yes.
He does not. Real shame.
Tetsuko is really Sergeant Tetsuko, Japanese Secret Service, and we are also looking for Mr. Facial Scar from that scene earlier on, so let's work together. No, as Nodi said, is like, ooh, let's have sex now.
And they do.
Not like, you, Kawachi. Just you, Tetsuko.
Legitimately, we go from him being scolded because he calls her a geisha, right? Mm. Which is not. And Kawachi goes, she's not a geisha. She's a sergeant. And the next shot is her massaging his back post-sex. And they do an extended bit about, like, Japanese women. That I really, it's like pushing the cultural insensitivity and misogyny factors like way up just by itself, where he's like, he's never had sex with a Japanese woman before and he thinks it's like special in a kind of magic way, I think.
Yeah, it's real bad. It's real bad. He's like, Japanese women have a special way. Like, most you can say for this scene is at least she initiates the sex.
True.
This one seems to be consensual. There we go.
A low bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First one.
I love this scene because he gets a phone call. God knows where they are how fucking Babcock has his number, but whatever. Babcock calls him and is like, oh, it's so soddy set. You have to do the fucking movie?
Yeah, I think.
Because Ralston's dead. You have fucked up so bad, dog.
He keeps being late to stuff, you know, while he's fucking around. Ralston has been killed off screen.
Mission failed.
Yeah.
This plays into a theory of mine about this movie that I've forward sizzled a little, but there's a bunch of Japanese in this, obviously, like the main bad guy. Every villain is all talking in Japanese. They talk Japanese to our main guy a lot. Never at any point is that translated.
No.
I've chosen to believe that this is a directorial decision to put you in the shoes of our protagonist because 117 doesn't speak even a fucking word of Japanese.
Nope.
And I'm choosing to believe that he spent this entire movie just having no fucking clue what is going on at all. People talk to him and he just felt like, mm-hmm, yep. And then he's doing shit.
Ava even calls him out for that earlier on. Like, when he fits in with the microphone, she's like, you don't speak Japanese. You're not going to know what the fuck's happening in this meeting. He's like, shut up.
And again, I remind you that his attitude towards going to Japan was,
I get the message. It's Japan.
It's Japan, whatever. I'll figure it out.
Fine, whatever. How hard can it be?
He's like walking around, guards shouting at him, and he's like, no, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. How hard can it be? They got weird shoes. That's all I need to know. So Babcock is like, listen, Ralston is dead because of you. Will you fucking, like, get back on the movie now?
Mm-hmm. Ava is obviously the villain of the film, my dog. Like, come on.
Yeah, she keeps doing, like, sexy banter. She's so evil.
Yeah, look at her eyebrows.
They go to, like, surveil her house, and she's there with a guy. And this guy...
I don't think she's there. It's just him.
Oh, no, she is there.
Yeah, she is. He gets Babcock to, like, call her away with, like, a sort of pretextual phone call. And then he breaks into the house.
Don't mind to say, 117 enters the gaff and apprehends this white boy.
Yeah.
Oh, he apprehends the shit out of this white boy. But this white boy, right, I like this white boy because he's a very striking face.
Yeah,
yeah, he's so cunty. I love him.
He looks like if George Russell was hot. Like, this is if we've watched better films, this is Henri Serre from Jules and Jim, and not someone who had a lot of success after that movie and ended up being in this. This is his kind of like Lazenby in Hong Kong phase, right?
Oh, that's a pity because I think he does a good job in this.
He's
also a lot more attractive in his suits, or a lot better tailored than 117. I'm like, where was this guy the last three movies?
Seriously, though, right? Like, and again, much like with the Macintosh guy, like, there's a little bit of frisson here. Like, it gets a little bit, like, gay. And the thing is, if they had, like, instead of this idiot, Frederick Stafford, if they had kept Coe and Matthews and just leaned into it, this could have been a beautiful homosexual series of films. But instead, it's just mid.
Yeah. But this guy's like, hello, I'm the real John Wilson.
Yeah, I'm her real husband. And we get the second polyamory vibes check. Mm. And this is the good polyamory vibes, because the way in which John Wilson brackets real, like, confuses and throws OSS Andy Set off the scent is like, Yeah, it's actually cool. Good for her if you two are fucking, like, I don't care. We've been divorced. I have, like, compersion or whatever. Yeah, I have this copy of The Ethical Slut. Have fun, you know?
His line is, take good care of her, which I'm just like, oh, that's nice.
Quite sweet. Like, yeah. It works totally, by the way. Like, yeah. The second he leaves, Ursa Sandi says, like, what a nice guy. I have no further questions.
Sure, he's not the villain of the film. But Saki does have further questions, because Saki, remember Saki? Saki's in the film.
Yeah,
don't get attached. He's not in the film now. In fact, because he follows Wilson, and then Wilson puts on a pair of mirrored blue aviators.
Yeah, it's fucking sick.
Shoots him dead, and then it's like, yeah, and walks away.
You can genuinely grab this image and a few other like shots of Henri Serre walking around from this movie and make a kind of like John Wilson fan cam, because it is like gangster shit. The way that he like shoots this guy, the funniest gunshot acting I've seen in a minute, puts on the glasses and just walks. It's great.
It needs like Tommy Hilfiger fragrance in the bottom right or something. Like, he looks like he's in a fragrance ad. It's very cool.
See this like soundtrack to a really slowed down Lil Uzi Vert. Like, it just...
it's really good.
We also get a really interesting shot where the like... Sharky? Fuck me.
Might as well be.
That's from Doctor No. But yeah.
We're like one syllable off. It's Sharky. Like.
Interchangeable henchman.
Sharky is Sharky. They're one.
Yeah.
Carl Jung is writing papers about
We're
this.
Using actually the naming etymological similarities of Sharky and Sharky to sort of build like a big meta analysis.
Yeah.
The genealogy of this Eurospy.
It's the one film. But so yeah.
The local ally gets got.
I'm going to get a PhD on this shit, and then you're not going to be laughing at me.
I haven't been.
You haven't been, I know.
Just earnestly, like, I haven't been laughing at you.
It was more of a general you to the audience. You two have been nothing but supportive.
I see. No, they're definitely laughing at you because we're professional comedians. There's this lantern outside the temple with, like, a sort of circular cutout, and they frame Asaki's car in it, and I thought it was well done. There's a couple of these.
Yeah, again, whoever directed the second unit, great job.
Yeah, for real.
There's a couple of good shots in this.
I will say this as well. This does make Saki a kind of late entry 009.
I guess.
No, the local ally isn't a 009, I don't think.
The local ally typically gets murdered.
That's true, yeah. I guess Ralston was a 009.
Ralston must have been the 009.
He was the 009. He was
009 not appearing in this film. So at this point, Sandi Sett goes back to Ava and he's like, hey, I figured out that you're the villain of the film.
Miss Wilson, you're clearly fucking with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're the villain of the film because there's no one else around.
What's the other technique available to a 60s Eurospy other than rape when a woman like annoys him in any way?
Violence?
Yeah, violence. So he slaps
her. Baby. Yeah, he gets a phone call and they're like, Hubert, they fucking killed Saki.
Your Spectre... Your husband is Spectre. You gave away the radio codes and blew up the base because you're Spectre. And then she's like, I'm not actually. I'm nice. I hate that my husband's in Spectre.
Yeah, she kind of plays the woman card here. But yeah, in the 60s, you could still do that.
Yeah, and as like an ultimate misogynist, 117 immediately falls for this. And he just like starts cupping her face and be like, oh no, no, precious, beautiful.
Yeah, she's like, I just wanted to support my husband. And then he joined Spectre. So I had to like, you know, help with the Spectre stuff.
It's the funniest thing. You're like, I love and support my Spectre husband. She's like posting on a forum like, yeah, he's really in Spectre at the moment. I wish he wouldn't, but I'm trying to support him and I just hope he kind of gets through it. Like, he's getting red pilled.
Your man.
Like, it's like she almost like he's joining like the red pill movement or something. She's like, I supported him like, you know, getting his act together, but like him being in Spectre is tearing apart our family.
Doing like a Guardian magazine sort of feature and the like main photo is like me and my husband. I've got my like arm around him. It's in the sofa of our like lovely North London home, and it's like our marriage is being torn apart by his being in Spectre addiction. Like, I do a bunch of really sympathetic pull quotes to make me seem nice, and I divorce him.
Is this somehow the fault of transgenders?
I don't know if he's going to get home or if he's going to touch the metal plate.
It's so hard waiting for your husband to come home when you know he works for an organization that doesn't tolerate failure.
He sucks. He's gonna fail. I keep telling him this.
Being in a group chat with all the other, like, Spectre wives. Spectre wives is a really good bit. I'm gonna, like, fucking have that in my head for
saying
writing.
It, I'm saying you can't join Spectre. You fail too often. You need an organization that tolerates failure.
Do you think once you have to touch the metal plate, right? Do you think that your widow is kind of like socially like pushed out of the Spectre Wives group because she makes all the other Spectre Wives feel too nervous and bad.
I should have known something was up when he wasn't just wearing a wedding ring, but also a ring with an octopus on it.
There's no way they have a robust like next of kin payoff system because like there's no way these guys are unionized. Otherwise, they wouldn't be being killed for mistakes.
Just like you touch the metal plate and it like not only kills you, it like perfectly incinerates the lunch that was like lovingly packed for you by your Spectre wife.
Oh no.
Getting you a new eye patch for your anniversary.
Sorry, darling, but the other thing that doesn't tolerate failure is our marriage.
I think Spectre probably puts like a real strain on a marriage, right? Because like,
it gotta.
Yeah. Like, because you're probably not working if your husband's in Spectre, right? Like, because like, imagine.
You'd hope not. Well, Monica Bellucci wasn't.
First of all, for the money, but second of all, because like, if he's out there, you know, trying to like attach a canister of nerve gas to a helicopter, right? You can't go to work as like, I don't know, like a fucking cardiologist or like retail assistant or other jobs that people have just every day and just like be like, yeah, this is cool, like double income, no kids, Spectre household. No, you've got to like, because the hours are so unsociable, because it's so like all consuming and weird, and probably there's like a hell of an NDA attached. It's like he's in the army or something. Like you it's really like you moved around a lot between like Bangkok, Tokyo, etc.
There's no way you've got your own job. I mean, for one thing, if you want a lack of toleration of failure, you need to pay me enough money to not want to fail you. You know, like if you're giving me minimum wage, you're going to be getting minimum effort, and then I'm going to have to touch a metal plate really quickly.
Also, we know that being in Spectre isn't conducive to having a family, because the only Spectre guy we know who had a daughter, the daughter was Leia Sado and ended up fucking James Bond. Yeah. So like, again, the Spectre wife is just like, it's affecting our daughter, like she's fucking James Bond now.
Having a rebellious phase where you fuck James Bond because you grew up in a Spectre family.
That is just that's the plot of the last two movies.
Yeah, I grew up in a really strict kind of Spectre family. It was always finding guns around the place.
Yeah, under the sink.
It was only until I went on Spectre Rumspringer that I started to realize that like things are strange out there.
Spectre Rumspringer, where you spend a summer with MI6.
Learning that I might have done Spectre Rumspringer.
First boyfriend, like, cupping my face and be like, I'll tolerate your failure. It's okay.
Aww. Oh, that's Aww. Really sweet, actually.
But I did end up going back to Spectre.
It's going to be really hard for me not to immediately start writing Spectre Wives the second I finish the recording.
The Real Housewives of Spectre.
Real Housewives of Spectre Island.
Wait, copyright. Yes! Copyright. Kill James Bond 2024. You can't touch this shit. Real Housewives of Spectre Island will be coming to Hulu at the end of the year.
My husband, the supervillain.
Oh my god. Okay. Yeah. Right. Fine. We're all working on a fucking script for this, and we're going to pitch that.
Right, yeah, so you get another M scene, and the AM scene is like, all right, first of all, your guy's dead, you didn't do anything, everyone's dying.
You're getting bad. This is an organization that tolerates the absolute fuck out of failure.
Yeah, but your direct orders from me are, don't fucking do anything.
M says, we're paying the ransom, you fucked around too much, and we run out of time, man.
You fucked it, man.
The thing is, right, MI6, OSS, the CIA, whatever it is, whatever organization is on the side of good in these things, tolerates an unlimited amount of failure. Like, even when Bond gets kicked out, they always go, ah, go on then, come back in MI6. They tolerate infinity failure. And so this time, they're like, whatever you do, don't lose Eva Wilson on the way back to the United States. And guess what? Of course, they fucking successfully kidnap her from M.
From M, actually, which yeah. is, yeah, it was really funny.
However, there's no real scene with it. Like, Hubert's just like, just take her back to Washington. She's done. She can stand trial. And, like, you get a scene of her in the car with M. And he's like, there's no way that you're going to get kidnapped. And then there's no, like, interstitial scene. It's just later on in the film, there's a scene of her in the car with Wilson, who's going like, well, obviously, we couldn't let you leave. Like, obviously, they got him.
M runs over a cyclist, Keir Starmer style. And then the cyclist...
Oh, fuck, I forgot about the cyclist.
The cyclist is faking he's a goon, and that's how they kidnap Ava. And then M gets arrested because he also does not speak Japanese, despite the... Babcock, you're the CIA's guy in Japan. You should speak some fucking Japanese, you dick.
He's gotten arrested by Japanese cops. They're all yelling at him, and he's there like, oh, man, everyone's so mad at me.
I'm the head of the CIA in this country and I speak the language.
Yeah, but like, so the lesson from this is, if you hit like an Uber Eats guy on a bike with your car, just keep driving.
That guy's inspector, don't worry about it.
Yeah, that guy's inspector, he's also fake, yeah.
His wife's going to be really upset.
He's probably still moving. Just keep driving, you know, don't even look back. Just don't think about it at all. Like, really, like, you're still a good person. You can still, like, move on from that, I think.
You can still lead the Labour Party, if you feel like it.
The thing is, just don't ever go back there or think about it, and it's fine, you know?
I sort of lose the plot a little bit here. 117 has a fight with a guy with a samurai sword, which doesn't really seem to go anywhere.
Oh yeah.
They noticed that that the ambulance was fake. The guy who got hit by it, you see him later on, like taking the livery off your ambulance.
I would hate to be on like ambulance scrubbing duty, but I would love to be on ambulance livery changing duty. So
I wrote down, you know what? Fuck you, deliveries your ambulance.
By delivering it, you remove the ambulance's power and it just becomes a van.
It's just a van, yeah. You're disgraced to the ambulance unit.
I've seen a bunch of, like, deconsecrated ambulances used as, like, camper vans and stuff before. And you can always tell, in the same way that, like, you know, this building used to be a Pizza Hut, right? Like, this camper van used to be an ambulance. Like, people have presumably died in the back of your camper van, like...
You can't just be out here clocking ambulances.
Listen, I'm not saying that it's still an ambulance. I respect the journey it's undergone.
But biologically, it's still an ambulance.
No, I'm merely saying that there is an origin point that is, like, visible to me. And I respect the fact that it's made a difficult decision to be more authentic than most ambulances that just stay what they are, right?
I don't know, that ambulance, it's got really big hands.
No, you see, the thing is, right, I think that an ambulance that has been deconsecrated that way is in many ways, like, a stronger vehicle. And I'm sick of people calling me an ambulance chaser.
I knew you were going there. Yes.
Halloween for ambulances. Okay.
But I knew you were going to get to ambulance chase. I was like, come on, can't she do it? If she's not, I'm going to do it.
You can see when she's cooking. You really can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm wearing the big chef's hat, you know?
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
There's a samurai sword fight. You know what? You got to have one. It was fine. It was surprisingly good for the genre, but...
They're trying to draw things out because we know they're going to end up on a boat.
One thing first is, before they have the samurai thing, 117 like infiltrates this like a location, right? And they don't make it explicit. I assume it's meant to be like a Nightingale floor thing, right? Or it's just like a regular loud floor. But the way he creeps around is to just walk entirely on the balls of his feet without taking his shoes off. And it's just one of the funniest walks I think has been committed to film. And it doesn't work because the second he rounds a corner, there's a guy with a samurai sword going, okay, well, it's samurai sword time, motherfucker.
I've got this for a reason, and you are not going to like what that is. Sun.
Inevitably, the katana fight.
Yeah, there's a katana fight. It's really nice. Like, OSS fucking javelins this guy.
Yeah. Mm. He kills another guy with a phone.
He pretends to be dead.
Actually, an insanely good kill on the phone guy. I don't know.
Yeah, he just hang a guy out of the window on a telephone cord. Which
someone clocked in today. And the thing is after this point, every time I see someone speaking Japanese and you cut back to OSS 117, it really does behoove you to imagine him being like, I wonder what he's saying. He's on the phone. He's talking so urgently. I wonder what's going on. Anyway.
Yeah.
We know they've got to end up on a boat at some point, because that's how this all fucking ends. There's some shenanigans about, like, you know, Ava's been kidnapped. There's another guy, another villain, Korean guy, whatever.
Well, here's the thing about the villains, right? She has to meet the organization's bosses, the ones who her husband is, like, trying to impress, right?
Oh, yes.
They are, respectively, well, first of all, this movie gets the Die Another Day Award for anti-Korean racism, because I don't care to speculate, but I think the 1960s Japanese intelligence services may also have been pretty anti-Korean.
Probably.
Which we find out that one of them is this like Korean industrialist, and Tetsuko goes, oh yeah, Yokota-san, he's like an industrialist. Korean, by the way.
Bastard.
Just check this shit out. And he's Korean. And also, another guy called Vargas.
There's the second Vargas.
This is what he does.
He's moved up in the world, you know?
They're running the joint now. Don't bother about either of them. They're just dudes.
Don't get attached. No.
They're there so that John Wilson has someone to talk to about his evil plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Miss Wilson's there. She's getting a chat. They leave. She gets their attention from Hubert, who goes, hey, it's me. I'm here. guess what? I need you to plug this crystal into whatever wall socket you can find, and that'll help us.
It's a tracking device.
It's charged by jacking off.
It's a tracking device. And in the next scene, there's a guy on a big computer who says the phrase, "We're all set, Colonel. We've tuned into the crystal's frequency." And I liked that.
Yeah, absolutely. Crystals have those, you know.
But, ladies, gentlemen, it is a Eurospy movie. It's the finale of a Eurospy movie. Where are we going?
It's boat time.
We're getting on a boat.
Out to sea. Everyone get your boat shoes on.
We get on a really big boat, though.
Yeah. Yeah, a tanker.
And it's like, ooh.
It's got the, like, big boat that swallows a smaller boat from Thunderball.
Yeah, that's the funniest shit, because I started, like, trying to come up with an idea of, like, you can tell how much budget a Eurospy movie had by how big the boat they blow up at the end is. And they're in this massive great fucking boat, and I'm like, oh, shit, they've got dollars. And then they go into a little internal berth, and there is a second, much, much smaller boat in there. And I'm like, there it is.
Backing off from the thing to be like, yeah, this is the boat that we're going to fucking blow up. Yeah,
the tanker is stock footage, but the small boat is the one they blow up. But anyway, she activates the tracker. 117's like, right, off I go. It's time for the finale of the film. Mm-hmm. Tetsuko bites his finger playfully when she kisses him, which is like kind of cute.
Yeah.
He then like, he flies out over the tanker in a small aircraft, skydives in.
Cool.
Yeah.
Somehow he is not seen.
Mm-hmm. Also, by the way, when he gets like 10 feet above the water, he just like takes off the parachute and just free falls, which is, I always found, just like exit parachute.
Yeah, he gets into the sea next to the oil tanker, is presumably instantly dragged under and killed.
Yeah.
And just like crushed. You can't like swim near an oil tanker.
Man
like,
has
it will
not
fuck you
been
up.
Reading how to avoid huge ships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Climbs aboard with a grappling hook.
Yeah, Batman style.
Batman style. And then infiltrates. He does some like sneaky Splinter Cell stuff, including a bit where he like has to like perch on some pipes hanging from the ceiling.
Mm.
And then I had completely forgotten about the miniature fighter planes at this point.
Yeah.
But remember the miniature fighter planes? Well, they're here and they're also nuclear, I guess.
Oh.
Because there's like a nuclear reactor and some guys in the like Dr. No hazmat suits walking around.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's going to be something explosive on that small boat. There has to be.
Yeah.
So
like the timer is about to run out. The like deal is off, clearly. They're going to blow up at like another American base. And they're going to do it with the like miniaturized fighter planes.
Yeah. The Americans try to deliver $100 million in diamonds, but I think Vargas fucks it up somehow, or Tetsuko sabotages it, and then the Americans flee with the diamonds.
I really like how the Americans are just like, yeah, fuck it, we will concede to terrorism. Like, we will absolutely pay you off. We're trying so much. We're, like, throwing, like, pallets of cash at you, but you won't.
They're doing the
it.
Margaret Thatcher thing of, like, we don't negotiate with terrorists. Terrorists, I was just kidding.
Yeah. We don't negotiate with terrorists except when we really want to.
Me on public. I will never negotiate with terrorists. Me immediately on private sliding into DMs. Hey.
You have been added to terrorist chat, bracket secret.
You've been contacted by the organization.
But yeah, so they fucking infiltrate their way to the control room of these fighters, where the real John Wilson,
yes,
is like preparing to like blow up the American base, and they have a fight.
This is pretty good. Henry Zell, he's fucking fast. Like, he's throwing punches out. There's some real, like, weight behind some of these things.
What was wrong with this guy, if there was anything wrong with him, that he didn't get, like, a lot of work?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good fight. Like, they do well. Like, they managed to launch one of the little miniature planes.
What the fuck happens now?
Do you have a fist fight on a burning boat? Yeah.
It's over.
Eva kills her husband. She finally, like, breaks free of his, like, sort of poisonous control. And becomes a Spectre ex-wife by shooting him.
Again, though, we need some music. This is the point where you should have the like, but instead we just have like, it's just a boat engine.
It's just static shots. It's really hard. You can tell that they're really struggling to film in such a
small. Yeah, that nonce just didn't do a good job on the soundtrack.
I know that the Spectre ex-wives have like way better brunches. Like, no question about that. Like,
well, Monica Bellucci was a Spectre ex-wife, wasn't she? What happened to her in that film?
Ah, I don't remember. Probably fine.
Yeah.
Mm. Probably got covered in a substance, statistically.
Yeah, probably. Well, two, probably.
Would hate to get covered in a substance.
That's not true.
I don't like that we have the kind of, like, you have the human intelligence sources to know that, you know?
Mm.
I can follow that to, like, one remove to know how you know that, you know?
I think it would depend on the substance.
What's wrong with getting covered in substances? This is a neutral thing. Like, this, it's substance dependent.
So long as you leave a space at the base of my spine for my skin to breathe. But yeah, so he like seizes control of the little tiny fighter and like aims it at the fucking boat. And then they jump off in time to avoid the explosion. By the way, as he's like shoving her off the boat, he's like, I hope you can swim, by the way. Which I would have considered this question before blowing up the boat, but yeah, whatever.
We do get quite a fun scene transition where they jump in the water and then they surface in like a hotel pool. Because it's like sometime later and now they're on holiday. Like, yay!
Yeah. And he dodges work again in the classic like, oh, I'm busy shagging, so I won't be in sort of way.
He's done nothing but dodge work this whole film.
It's fine when a podcaster does it, but when a spy does it. And so consequently, for the next movie, he's going to be as late for everything because he was fucking, you know?
Yes.
They made one, two, three more of these, by the way.
Really?
Really.
Jesus Christ.
OSS 117 double agent. OSS 117 takes a vacation, which I'm pretty certain he already fucking did in this one.
He's done nothing but take a fucking vacation.
What did he do? Like, did he do anything? He hasn't actually done anything in this entire movie.
The only spy work he did was specifically against orders.
I mean, Bond does that all the time, yes, to be fair. Yeah. But yeah, he didn't really...
Yeah, that telegram he was dodging at the end was telling him he's sacked.
He's just going to ignore that and show up to work the next day. And
yeah. OSS 117, you are the worst ever spy.
Genuinely, though. But we don't have to just resort to subjective judgments about this. Yeah.
What is this, the cast review?
Yeah, we have a science-based system. It's called the WPATH Guidelines for Transgender Care.
Yeah, we have an evidence-led and compassionate approach.
Uh-huh.
And so we're going to fucking rip this fucking film a new one.
We have an evidence-led and compassionate approach called the SCUM system. It stands for SMARM, Cultural Insensitivity, Unprovoked Violence, and Misogyny, which is also what WPATH grades you on. So, I just ate some of my own hair. Jesus Christ. This is the thing about having, like, long hair. It gets my face. How smarmy is this movie on a scale of 0 to 7?
I want to say, like, 5. He definitely has more lines in the first half.
Yes.
All the stuff about I'm your husband and like I always go too far and commit crimes in the name of my country, brackets sexy.
In some ways, it's too perfunctory to be as smarmy as it should be. Like, by the end of it, it's just like, oh, whatever. Like, to be fair, even in the first part, when he's told, like, you're going to next location, he goes, oh, I'll boss that.
I get the message. It's Japan.
So, yeah, fine. Yeah, easy.
When he's like, you were built to carry batteries.
He does say that to a woman, which is so baffling. Like, it would work on those like girls who like want to be robots, you know, the like mecha sort of pilot girls. So, yeah, that would hit. But like to like a not that woman, weird.
Japanese women have a special way.
5?
Yeah, I would say 5. That's about right.
Cultural insensitivity.
It's got to be 6 or 7. Like,
this isn't good. Start to finish.
Yellow face?
In yellow face, none of the Japanese is translated at any point, even by the characters that we like are supposed to sympathize with. It's really bad.
Japan itself isn't portrayed as like a particularly like negative place. It's just an unusual place where they have strange shoes. But again, it's like largely as a function of lack of effort, because they couldn't be bothered to make it like have any sense of anywhere. So it's just like, well, it's Japan, much as the guy says. I get the it's Japan.
I guess like Kawachi and Saki are competent allies. They do just disappear from the film in Saki's case because he's killed. But like,
yeah, you have a Japanese female spy who gets to do more than the Japanese female spy, and You Only Live Twice in a lot of ways.
Yes, that's true, but she's also an exotic, sexy, servile Asian
true.
Lady.
True. It's very reductive to take all of these factors and all these like different racist things, and especially for us as 3 white people, to like condense them down to 6.
Mm-hmm. We've been doing that for the last 2.5 years, and I don't think we're going to stop now. So,
no.
Yeah, no, we're going to keep doing 6. It as well. 6.
Yeah. Unprovoked violence?
I mean, hanging the guy with the phone was a bit extreme, but it was pretty provoked. He was trying to kill him.
Yeah,
he doesn't do a ton of unprovoked violence. That is the one of the things about this guy.
Saving grace.
Largely because he doesn't want to do anything. Like, if he's doing any sort of spy work at all, he's upset about it.
Well, he's trying to do, like, more smarm and more fucking, right? Like, even when he catches up with, like, the guy in the, like, overcoat or whatever, he's trying to fuck him. And then that gets him uncle chopped.
Yeah, no, he's huge into S&M.
Yeah.
No, he's huge into smart and misogyny. He's just going for those two. If he's big enough S&M.
We have a science-based system. It's called the BDSM system. It stands for...
Yeah, there's actually not a lot of violence in this, like, except in the last half hour.
Not really.
I mean, he slaps a woman unprovoked to get information out of her and punish her, right? That's got to be worth a couple of points, right? We count women as people.
Want to say two?
Yeah,
sure.
And misogyny.
Really fucking high. I mean, it's not a corrective rape, but it is a textual rape that, like, serves to advance a successful romance.
Yes.
Like, she likes him more afterwards.
Yeah, on-camera sexual assault multiple times.
Yep.
Some of his comments to her are, like, deliberately violating. Like, when he zips her dress back up after he fits her with the microphone, later on he says, like, I never trust a woman with a beauty mark on her right hip. I'm like, the only reason to say that would be to let her know that you were looking at her hips when you shouldn't have been. Like, that's just such a...
They should kill this guy, for real.
Yeah, they should kill this man.
Take him out.
So, actually, hang on a second. Whoa, I just want to go back to unprovoked violence. He does attack the big guy for no reason.
Oh, yeah. The big guy was only supposed to keep him in there.
Textually.
But that's a failure of communication by the guy handing him the meeting gun.
Yes, because Kroken doesn't speak Japanese, so he didn't understand when they're going, this is my gun. Isn't it nice? Check it out.
Yeah, check out my cool gun. Anyway, the meeting's through there, yeah.
Cool, huh? All right, if you can wait next door, that'd be fantastic. You know, this guy's like, I'm gonna start killing anyone as fast as I can.
Yeah.
I guess in that case, that makes it provoked violence. And he leaves that guy alive, so he wasn't, like, really disproportionate.
But, like, textually in the film, it's unprovoked, because Kawachi then later says, like, why did you attack our guy?
Yeah, no, it is unprovoked violence.
Yeah, but Kawachi doesn't know that his, like, dipshit middle employee is, like, pulling a gun on the guy, like...
Well, all right, fine. I'll leave it on two. But anyway, back to misogyny.
Yes, finally.
I think it's got to be, like, minimum seven. Like, yeah. This, like, the guy's a rapist. He's like an assaulter and a rapist of women. Like,
seven at least, 100%.
I would say seven. Yeah, comfortably.
Cool.
I'd go eight. I really would. I think this is bad. I think this is bad. I don't like seeing it. And that gives us a total score of 21, which is pretty fucking bad. Although it's, like, better than the last OSS we did, Mission from a Killer, which was 22.
Mm-hmm.
God, yeah, they're getting worse, though. Like, OSS in Bangkok was 14 somehow.
Well, it had the good guy in it still.
The good news is that, like, assuming we don't get bored and move on to a new season before this, if we do watch the next three OSS zombie sets, none of them have this guy in them anymore.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, they replace him. They recast for the next one, and they steal a bit that they originally intended to do in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, where they go, yeah, he's had plastic surgery to fool his enemies. So we're going to see a, like, facially feminized OSS Sandy set.
It's the same guy.
This guy's going to look like Jimmy Carr.
As for the next free episode...
I would hate to have the facial feminization surgery that makes you look like Jimmy Carr more than almost anything.
Horrification surgery.
Very tax deductible.
You know what's actually kind of funny? Is that You Only Live Twice was 22, so this is 1 point better.
Wow.
Fuck me. It came out the next year.
Yeah. I guess the point is that if you put less effort even than James Bond into becoming entirely Japanese, right, then... Yeah.
He didn't become any entirely Japanese. He didn't even speak Japanese.
0.00% Japanese.
They don't even get the fucking, like, oh, I studied Oriental languages at Cambridge. He's like, I studied Oriental languages never, and I am not fucking going too dark. Like,
let me tell you this right now. I don't know how to speak Japanese. I don't know what they've got in Japan.
Guy who earnestly, like, goes to Japan expecting the English to be the only language in the world.
My contact, Saki, who speaks Japanese, dead. Failed to protect him. Entirely, completely fucked this up.
My man is having a, like, first two episodes of Shogun linguistic experience. Like,
oh man. Going through those show screens. All right, we have to stop.
We have to. We must.
This has been an episode of Kill James Bond.
It really has.
In 2 weeks' time on the free feed, it's the Quiller Memorandum.
Oh, fuck off.
It's a British neo-noir Eurospy movie.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
We got Brit now.
What's the next bonus episode going to be?
it's back round. It was to the bone was 3 ago, so it's Abby now.
Is it me? Oh, it I is. Don't know. I've not gone prepared. I will select something fun.
Ooh. Fantastic. Well, in the meantime, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye. Kill James Bond will return in 2 weeks' time on the free feed with the Quilla Memorandum. That's, we're all excited for that, aren't we, folks? I'm looking around the room, I'm seeing nothing. I got nothing from any of you. The Quilla Memorandum. Alright, whatever. But if that is simply too long for you to wait, you can head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/killjamesbond, all one word. And next week we're doing Beowulf. Thank you to our patrons, and of course special thanks to our £15 and above patrons, and there are 90 fucking two of you, and they are Lobion's Daughter, Candy Fox, Freya Aloysius, Gustavo Lira, Little May B, Jack Holmes, Mike Berg, Hannah Oberhart, Nick Boris, Jason Hager, Nato Mori, George Rohack, Kentucky Fried Commie, Drone Lover, Yarrick, Melody Morrow Gonzalez, Happy, at the time of release, Belated Birthday Abby, Labor Delenda Est, Callan Burney, Jay Martindale, Library Hitman, Trip, Max Gamenhart, Jonathan Gerd, Mothman, Beef Crime, Jack Drummond, Kit Devine, Tub O, Maeve Victoria Roth, Rosie Can't Fail, Troy Hudson, Staz Moonchillin, Anhedonia, Them Fatal, Forrest L. Norvell, Claire, Artemis, Anya Top, Lenina, The Project Project, Beth Lucy Stab, Emrys, Commissar Ozzy, some sort of silly Canadian creature, Whitney Wolverine, Loretta Mazurf, Ash, not in Florida, just the worst, Hell, a trans robot, a guy who forgets their own pronouns. I don't know anyone who would ever do that. That would be stupid. If you were to render an episode of Well, There's Your Problem with the wrong pronouns. Still They Them, Joyous Uwu, Touchable Tip, Zam Hutch and Evelyn, a traditional Scrench, Steve Widdershins, Akira, Arthur Sex Crimes, Violet Cybra, Isopod Gal, Lady Ariane, Katie Brobst, Annie Ruby, Clarification, Bronan, Alex, Noblesse Oblahai, Connor's Cool Big Sister, John 2089, Gay Perry, Seng Shen, Liz and Ash in Florida, Corvid Cultist, Woolscott, Quinn Valeri, Wolfie is Normal, Al Irwing, Philippa Smith, Robert Greensmith, Finn Ross, Abigail, Loz Pycock, Megacombi, Pandora Hex, Cariad, Emily, Queen of Sloths, Terse Eat Shit and Die Alone, Josh Simmons, Zoe Shepherd, Cheer Up Love Might Never Happen, Talkative Tiger, Lauren Bastin, and Misidentified Lemon. Thank you all for supporting Kill James Bond. I gotta start upping the tempo of this jazz, because I am going to get in here. Kill James Bond is November, Abigail and Devon. Our producer is the wonderful Mr. Nate Bethay. Our podcast art is by Matty Lubchansky, and our website is by Tom Allen. See you next time.